Hello, everyone. So I decided to talk about the topic of conflicts of interest, also known as competing interests. Well, most people have aesthetic attractions, sexual attractions, erotic attractions, and romantic attractions, and sensual attractions. But the world of work and the world of the provision of professional services often does not address the gray areas of these attractions, including friendship attractions they overlook, including interpersonal attractions they overlook as well. Most people have interpersonal and friendship attractions. You know, interpersonal attraction, friendship attraction, what have you. So I'll give you some examples. Let's say, number one, this is the easiest. Co-workers. Let's say you have co-workers that are very positive people. You're a very positive person yourself. And sometimes co-workers can become friends. The world of work is accepting of that. They're not going to be angry that that happens, because in their mind, if y'all are friends, that means we have more economic productivity going on for us as a business. So yay, stay friends and don't quit the friendship ever. The world of work has trouble with the fact that sometimes co-workers, we're talking about people on equal footing. We're not talking about superiority, inferiority. We're talking about equal footing. Those who may fall in love, you may meet the man of your dreams, the woman of your dreams, or the non-binary adult of your dreams on the job. And you cannot help where you meet your type, the partner that best complements your adventures in life. The world of work will shame those people for something that naturally occurred. I wasn't trying to seek or force anything. I met this person and we just knew that we were meant to be. So in the world of work, that happens often, because when you spend 8+ hours around people, it's unfair to assume or think that, oh, they're just going to be professional all the time. No. Co-workers eat lunch together. Not all of them, but many of them do. And they're not going to talk about work all the time while they're are in the cafeteria, or go to a deli, or drive to a fast food restaurant, or walk to a pizzeria, or even go to like a Whole Foods place and get boxed buffet type of food. They're not going to talk about projects every second. That's why coworkers love lunchtime, because they don't have to be work-minded all the time. It's like, okay, what do coworkers talk about when they are at lunch? The stuff that most people talk about that's nothing to do with work. So I don't understand why the world of work says y'all can't date ever. I'm like, you spend most of your time at work and very little the rest of your time at home with your relatives and friends. So you're going to have attractions on the job. I'm not saying sleep with everybody on the job. I'm not even saying that. I'm not even saying date everybody on the job. No, I'm talking about you were focused on your career. That other person focused on their career. And y'all just innately gravitated towards each other because y'all had similar positive victories within your employment. And y'all loved the way they saw you treat the customers and clients. Like, oh, wow. You're very genuinely nice to clients and customers and other coworkers. And sometimes the coworkers bring their kids and you're nice to their kids. That can be a turn on for other coworkers who go, I'm finding this person attractive. And then after a while, you notice each other's looks and go, wow, I am so grateful we work for the same company. I get to see your beauty Monday through Friday. For some people, Monday through Saturday. For some people, Monday through Sunday. And that happens. And I look at the world of work going, okay, as long as there's no abuse, no violence, no crime, no trauma complexes, and no oppression, I don't see the problem. I don't understand why you can't date a coworker ever, really. But again, we are reputable people, professionally speaking, and we're reputable people, personally speaking, so I don't see the harm in it. So, how does that relate to me? Well, because of my calling, I'm going to be in many, numberless, meaning too many to be counted, workforces, not just one. So there may be times where my colleagues will think I'm sexy and I think my colleagues are sexy. I don't think realistically I have sex with all my colleagues and all my colleagues will still want to have sex with me. I've never met a person who slept with all their colleagues. Like every work environment, no, that doesn't happen. And I've never met a person who dated all their colleagues, every workforce they were in. That just doesn't happen. Because obviously everywhere you go, some people are not going to be attracted to you. Professionally and personally, they're just not going to feel that. So that would be far-fetched right there. But I will say that, you know, like some people won't date you because they don't feel that way towards you. For me, there'll be many people that are my colleagues that will want to date me. I may want to date them. And it's not because of blurred lines. No, there's nothing to do with that. It's, wow, more than one person is capable of complimenting my journey, my excursions, my novelty, my adventure. And we have we just have natural chemistry and natural compatibility. So how would I deal with that? I remember the law. I remember reason. I remember moderation. I remember the golden rule, the platinum rule, and the silver rule. And sometimes with colleagues that I'll be working with, what I would do is set the proper boundaries to make sure, hey, nobody's been taken advantage of. None of us are pushovers. None of us are doormats. None of us are insecure. None of us are having these attractions and wanting to act them out because of trauma, because of pain, because of anguish, because of sadness, because of depression, and because of grief, sorrow, woe, exasperation, irritation, frustration. And I would be honest with them and say, look, we know how we feel, and we're not going to deny how we feel. And let's just, and I would say, hey, we both know that how whatever we do outside of work can't ruin the companies that we're assisting. And the kind of colleagues I have would be okay with that, but sometimes that happens. So for me, I would make sure that people let me know, my colleagues, okay, the ones that have the hots for me have the hots for them. Is this casual or committed? I don't believe in playing games with anybody's heart, anybody's mind, anybody's soul. I'm not going to do that. So if we came to an agreement, this is how things are, however we decide, okay. I'm not saying that I go to work to depend on my sexual needs romantic needs. No. No. I depend on me for my sexual needs romantic needs. What I'm saying is this. Because of what I'm called to do, and because I'm not like most people, therefore I have a not like most people calling upon my life, a lot of people that I work with will find me attractive, and I find them attractive. Will I be like the, you know, they say the town whore, which is derogatory, I understand. Will I be like the company whore every company I work in? No, not in any company I work in. And I'm sex positive. I'm just saying it's easy to hear what I'm saying and misconstrued as, oh, you want to be basically the town whore of the company and you just fuck the whole company. No. You just want a date night to the whole company. No. I didn't say that either. What I'm saying is that I understand how attraction works, and it's also good to have conversations. It's also good to be mindful of how our private behavior affects the relationships with other people we have in our lives. We're not the only people who have relationships. So what I would do is continue to be very selective and discernible to make sure that the attractions don't come from don't come out of a lack of self-healing. You know, if they're unhealed people, no. If they're people heal themselves every day and it's pretty obvious they do that, then I would consider it. Consider it means I would still study all the dynamics to make sure whether they're all in our favor or not. They're not all completely in our favor, no go. If they're completely in my favor, completely in our favor, yes go. You know what I mean? So that one is a great example. Another example. Let's say that I am let's say people are in in a therapist-clientele relationship. I've always had a problem with the fact that in the professional world, they say, according to their code of ethics, well, if that person was your therapist, then that person can't be a good friend to you. They can't be your friend. I'm like, well, if you terminate the therapist relationship, but what if that client would make a true friend of yours, as long as you'd never go back to the therapist relationship, because all the help they needed specifically from you, they've achieved all their goals. So as long as you don't go back and you make it clear that they can always go to your colleagues in therapy for continued therapeutic support, I don't see the problem with that. To me, that is a healthy way of not having a dual relationship, right? Because if they are the type of people where they can be a true friend to you and there's no overlapping, they don't come to you with the same stuff they used to because they no longer come to your office and pay you every week, and they treat you the way a true friend treats their true friend. They never ask you anything about the type of therapy conversations you have with clients. They never talk to you much about your line of work in therapy. They usually never bring it up because they're so far removed from that. It's just they talk to you about type stuff friends talk to each other about. Then I don't see that as a conflict of interest, because there are former clients like me. We know how to not go there. We don't have a problem with that. It's like, okay, if when we talk and what we talk about doesn't remind you of how we first started off, I mean, it's like being at a bar when we drink. Okay, we just drink and talk our shit. Shoot the shit, as some people say. And we laugh, we joke. And if we talk about anything serious, it's not like the type of talks we had in the office. It's typical serious stuff that friends talk about. I'll give you an example of something serious. Or friends would talk about. Sometimes friends talk about the weather. Sometimes friends talk about politics. Sometimes friends talk about books. Sometimes friends talk about movies. Stuff that has nothing to do with counseling. I think they should lift that. Never befriend the person that you used to therapize. I get when you're in therapy, like you don't befriend that person when y'all in therapy. Okay, but after they've proven to be that mature, I think that there should be granting exception when it comes to that, in my view. And I get the whole, you know, don't sex or date the person that is your client because of power dynamics, comes off sexual abuse. That makes sense. But okay, once I got everything I needed out of you therapeutically, from client to therapist and therapist to client, I don't see why it would be weird to date that person, because that therapeutic relationship will never happen again. They're so far removed, that therapist is so far removed. And it's like, I don't understand how also what is wrong with you found your type in the person that used to give you professional services. It happens. You can't control who's the right one for you. Life doesn't work that way in terms of, well, I know who the right one for me is, and it's this person in this part of life. Life surprises people. Your type can be found anywhere. You never know where or when you're going to meet your type. The right partner for you. And so I've learned to let life surprise me. It could be a person that you're at a cashier, and the love of your life is a regular customer. Every Friday, you check out their groceries for them, and they pay for them. They pay the store for them that you work in. That has happened. And then in therapy, when they say, you really should attend the event of a client. Well, here's my thing. If it's like after therapy, meaning therapy's over, I don't see why we wrong to attend an event. And then if it depends on the type of event, if it's like a personal event, then I don't think the therapist should go. But if it's like a group dynamic event, it could be, I got my college degree or paid training certification. I don't see why a therapist can't go. It's professional. Academics is professional. Paid training academy, that's professional. Why can't I go to those type of events as a therapist? It's not like, hey, come to my house. It's not that. Or, hey, come to a birthday party. It's not that. It's totally like, wow, I get to see my client get be awarded their PhD, their master's degree, their THD, their JD, their associates, their bachelor's. No harm, no foul on that. And it's just, I think the boundaries are too rigid, because in therapy and just professional world, they often neglect the gray areas. I get why, like in the world of work, they say don't have sex with your coworkers or date your coworkers, because a lot of people in the world of work are untrustworthy, out up to no good. I get that. But there are exceptions to that rule when it comes to professionally mature and personal life mature type of people there. I don't think the ones who are mature should be under the same ban, not to date coworkers, sex coworkers, and the ones who are professional menaces to society and personal life and personal menaces to society too. Okay, another one. Let's say I'm a teacher and I'm a professor. I already know. Don't do anything with the students. Don't be romantic or sexual with the students. That makes sense. Okay, you're there to learn, not to, I want to sex you up, I want to date you up, no. But let's say I am teaching a course. And I don't give any special favors to any student. I don't give any special favors to any faculty member, period. I don't even give any special favors to anyone in leadership of the educational facility that I profess, that I'm professorial in, that I teach, that I'm a lecturer in. And what if one of the students had a mother, and me and that student's mother, the sparks were flying naturally in terms of the mind, the heart, the soul, the memories, and the body. It wasn't something that was premeditated, never pre-planned. As soon as we locked eyes, we just knew. You don't want for me, I'm going for you. We just knew. Many people would say that violates code of ethics because that makes life awkward for the student. I'm like, I don't give special favors to anybody, so how? I'm just give you good grades because I like you. No, if I like you, you still have to earn A pluses like everybody else does in the class. That's how I am. But again, I don't think it would be awkward for the student on my part if that were to happen to me, because me and that student would have already established a high respect for one another. I'm like, look, I would never put you in a bad situation. You're put in a bad situation. And I would tell the student, look, nothing was contrived. You know, I met your mom and we like each other like that. But nothing bad ever come between me and that student. Because in my mind, I respect Muslims, but students respect me, so I wouldn't be with one of their family members. It could be an aunt. Especially mom or aunts. They're the ones that are the most single in the family. And for me, it's like we have the proper balance between me, whoever is attracted to me, I'm attracted to them in that way. Mom, aunt, wanted, and the student wouldn't be awkward because it's Antonio, though. It's Antonio. Antonio, I see why my mom has a crush on him. I see why my aunt wants to jump his bones, because he knows how to treat a woman. He knows how to talk to a woman. He knows how to look at a woman. He looks at women correctly. He talks to women correctly. He approaches women correctly. And he makes women feel brand new by just being who he is. That brand new attitude, RSVCT, he found out what it means to them, to me, you know. So I think the student will respect me because, like, you know, well, Antonio's not rubbing it in my face, and Antonio's not making my life a living hell. You know, they met when my aunt visited the school. They met Antonio and they started blushing right away. So I don't think the student would be going, oh my God, my professor is sexing my mom, sexing my aunt. It wouldn't be to dismay of that student. I think it would be, well, I can't be mad at them for having feelings for him, because he never brings any awkwardness or any traumas to me and my family. I think student would go, I think me and that student would talk, not graphic details, but basically, hey, we still have high respect for each other. If anything, it would definitely be a sense of this doesn't ruin what we have in the classroom. If anything, I'm not braggadocious about it, and I'm not putting all your aunts and mom's business out there, not putting all my business out there. And with the pseudonym overall, with their mom or their aunt, and just in the whole situation, there would be no tabloid talk show verbal behavior. There would be no tabloid talk show nonverbal behavior either. We would all respect each other. We would all respect each other so much we wouldn't even have the thought of disrespecting each other cross our minds. They would do well in school, and I would be fair and impartial as a professor, and I think outside of school is outside of school. It wouldn't be plastered virtually or in person. And that way, no one in the faculty or any of the students had anything to worry about, because it's respecting the privacy of myself, student, mom, aunt, everybody involved. There would be no infidelity, and nobody would be cheated on. There wouldn't be any maternity or paternity suits or tests. No lie detector tests, none of those things. And I don't use my profession to attract anybody. I don't use my profession to sexualize anybody, nor romanticize anybody. So I want people and need people to understand that. Plus, I would never jeopardize myself nor anybody else at all, whatsoever. Another one. What if I have a friend and let's say my friend's mom and I we just have natural aesthetic intimacy, natural circumstantial intimacy, natural recreational intimacy, national conditional intimacy, national recreational intimacy, natural work intimacy, natural crisis intimacy, natural conflict intimacy, natural intellectual intimacy, natural emotional intimacy, natural physical intimacy, natural sexual intimacy, natural romantic intimacy, natural experiential intimacy,
natural spiritual intimacy, natural financial intimacy, as examples. And we're holistic, wholesome people in every sense of the word, in every which way. And there was no attempt to have anyone subjugated, nor empower, nor overpower anyone, nor back anyone to a corner, nor trap anyone. And lastly, no bullying, nor being braggadocious, then I don't see the problem in a situation me being my friend's mom wouldn't cause me or mom any angst. And plus I respect my friend's feelings. I would definitely have a friend that would be okay with it, because I wouldn't go by somebody's back to do anything. Just like the student situation that I told you about, the counterpart at the student, they wouldn't care, because again, I don't terrorize anybody. I don't even terrorize myself. I don't bring any hard-heartedness nor toxicity in anybody's life, not even my own. There's nothing about me that's creepy. There's nothing about me that's eerie. There's nothing about me that's scary. I'm not on some weirdo shit. There's nothing fucked up about me. There's nothing shitty about me. I'm a person of truth. There's nothing false in me. So, in this last one, it's a real long one for this last one. As y'all are getting the point. So, I thought about what it would be like if I had clients and customers. And We work together on a myriad of professional services that I'm skilled at assisting them with. I think what happens is sometimes the people that we service and the people that take our services, sometimes the attraction can be mutual. And yes, make referrals to get out of a sticky situation. That is very true. Is it always feasible to make referrals? No, because you may be the only one qualified or the best qualified to professionally assist them. And at the same time, you have these sensations inside of yourself, and they have sensations at themselves. So what I would do is try to keep the attraction talk outside of the professional conversation when we do in like coaching, consulting, counseling, consoling type of stuff. Or try my best not to talk about it and have them try their best not to talk about it. Sometimes you have to try, because being fully human is real. Or help make a, or have them see somebody else. If, you know, if it's the whole, well, look, traction is so strong, let's just take this outside of services and cancel our professional. That's a possibility. With some, in some situations, you can acknowledge it, but nobody ever acts on it. That's another possibility. Or both parties can feel it, but both parties never say it. And business goes just fine in all these possibilities. That's important. Or, because you're not going to be attracted to every person that's your client or customer, and not all your customers and clients will be attracted to you. But when it comes to a person like myself, I've had to acknowledge that it's not immoral for me to feel the attraction. It's not immoral for me to feel the attraction. It's more of, but I would make sure there's no divided interests going on. So what I would do is, yes, I believe in honoring code of ethics and ethics. I do. This episode, I just acknowledged that there's some situations where it's not harmful, meaning it's harmless, when people behave themselves well. Like, as long as whatever you're doing doesn't warrant the need for private investigators or trained detectives, then I don't see why not. And I don't ever use professionalism to cover up anything. I don't use professionalism as, this is the only way I can have sex, dating, and romance. No. I'm just acknowledging that even the world of professionalism, it is important to wisely respond to your human biology. But there's some complex situations where the world of professionalism doesn't have a definitive answer for. And I had to think about how I've thought about these gray area circumstances for years, and I would go, well, as long as everyone is well self-controlled and well self-disciplined, I truly don't see the agony. I don't think there is any agony. And another thing is, within these gray area circumstances, I would never talk to the student nor to my friend about the fact that I'm an intimate relationship with someone in a family. I would never, ever bring it up. I don't feel the need to. I don't want to. There's no deceit. But at the same time, I'm the type of person, if I'm in an intimate relationship with somebody, we can just talk about what we're doing. You know, we don't have to, every chance we get, bring it up to whoever listens. No. Just because that happened in my sexual past with every woman I was with, that does not mean I carry that over into my now forevermore in regards to how I deal with sex and sexuality. And this other one I wrestled with the most. The question of doing adult films was the hardest one, because I remember the women that I was talking with, as y'all know, marriage material, you know, all that. I struggled with that alongside what I remember and know for a fact that survivors said, that there needs to be survivor-friendly, sensory-friendly adult films. And I struggled with those things because when you have clients and customers, the ones that are attracted to you, the ones that are not attracted to you, I did not want to create any social awkwardness where they see me without clothing. And it's easier, and I felt like, well, what if it was easier to just help my clients and customers out without them seeing me without clothing? And I remember thinking to myself, well, what I would do is, if it's clear to me that I'm meant to be single the rest of my life, and occasionally doing sensory friendly, survivor friendly adult films would be harmless, because even though I am of privacy and confidentiality, I'm not a criminal, so I'm not to hide. At the same time, I remember saying to myself, well, if I'm in a relationship, serious relationship, I wouldn't want to
do any erotic films because of my commitment to somebody else. And at the same time, I said to myself, well, one area of my life doesn't have to negatively interfere with any other area of my life. Because this one's hard, that's why I'm going over these mixed feelings. Because at the same time, when you're not like most people, what I'm called to do, I can't be fully professional with people. And at the same time, because there's a professionalism element, I can't fully be personal with people. It's a mixture of the two. It's a mixture of professional and personal. Well, to some extent that's true. Other times I think I'm fully professional, fully personal. To me, it depends on my particular audiences because I help a diverse range of human beings. Not a trash TV behavioral type of person. So the adult films one was the hardest because also I deal with children, families, women. When I say deal with, meaning those were my main core population, the demographics to serve. And I figured out that that grown folk stuff, being kept away from kids, is a beautiful thing. And not to have children grow up too fast, that's a beautiful thing too. So I figured that the best I can do in adult films, based upon how I feel right now, is being a being a sensory friendly pleasure coach and a sensory friendly sensuality coach. And I say that because that does need to happen. And at the same time, I'm called to couples, so that's very important.
to have revivals of matrimony and just commitment in general, if you're not married, but y'all coupled up. That's important to me. So I then thought about how that was difficult for me because I have diversified audiences, as you already know. I don't want to unnecessarily alienate. I don't think that would happen, but something I'm sensitized to. The whole world is my audience. I'll fully settle the matter in the very next episode. And I must make it clear that most of the people that I'm professional with, about 9.8 out of 10, I'm just guessing, of the 10 people that I'm professional with, there's no business and pleasure being mixed. So no, there's no abuse of power on my part or their part, and there's no subordination concerns, because there's no subordination happening. There's no rankism. There's no abuse of rank happening at all. No one is being pulverized by anyone in these scenarios. So what I'm saying is, this goes to show you that most people cannot mix business and pleasure well. But there's a select rare few, me being one of them, that can. We don't do the most people category. Rare people in this category only mix business and pleasure well with other rare people. And it's good that it's rare, because that is the best and only way to be effective at protecting the company's reputation and protecting our personal reputation. Protecting the integrity of the company and protecting our personal integrity. So I just want to make that clear so people understand where I'm coming from. And I want to say this about adult films too. I struggle with it because this is the big reason I'm being the most honest here. When you're seen as marriage material the most out of all the women, groups of women, the most that see me as marriage material is a lot of black women, a lot of autism moms, a lot of church women, a lot of single mothers. And we've not talked about that earlier. I struggled with, but I know what a lot of my survivors ask me to do with adult films, but at the same time, you know, there is a need for many of these women to have a husband, because that is naturally, genuinely right for them. And I have, one of my spiritual gifts is marriage. And I was like, well, I don't think I can do both, you know. So that's been a hard one. What I can say is that I figured out that there is a way I can influence adult films, like I told you earlier, intimacy coaching, sensual coaching, eroticism coaching.
I'm going to be an intimacy coach, eroticism coach, and pleasure coach when it comes to television, films, pornographic films, and erotica. So that's where I am at this point. With that, I think it can still work, and I can still, you know, date these particular ladies that I specified to you, to see who's the one. You know, they're all the ones, just the one who's the most one. I don't like comparing people. I'm not a fan of human comparisons. I'm just not a fan of comparison spirit. And I feel like I do what I do not because of a warped sense of obligation, but a healthy obligation. So when I do episodes, I speak to where I am in my consciousness in these moments that I have with you, audibly speaking. And I feel like as for sex surrogate partner therapy, I struggle with that too. I struggle with that too because conflict of interest say you can't have a sex relationship with somebody that you have assisted in their erotic healing, sensual healing, sexual healing. But what if that person and you have the kind of chemistry where it's pretty much a lifetime type of chemistry? It's not a, you know, okay, we did our time together, we go our separate ways. What if you and that person really vibe well like that? It has healthy, lasting effects on us. So to not continue to have sex with, or, you know, do body mapping with that person, as it's called, would be challenging. And I've also remembered that, you know, when you go out of your way to help many people, there's no expectation of reward nor recognition on my part or their part. But sometimes, human biology, when you help somebody, not because of their trauma complexes or my trauma complexes, it's we're helping each other for all the right reasons. Sparks may fly as a result of compassion. It's a part of our human nature, our human condition. And I wrestled with these gray areas of conflicts and interest because it doesn't fully address all these situations I'm talking about. It's like, for me, I know that a lot of survivors like, yeah, you make an excellent sex surrogate partner. And I agree. However, when you are a person that many people want to be monogamous with, especially a lot of women, it's not that simple. So I have wrestled with these things because I like to fulfill the needs of my fellow survivors. I don't have a savior complex. I don't have a messiah complex. I don't have a god complex. I don't have a hero complex. I don't have a cult of personality. I'm not a cult leader. I'm not a cult follower. I say that often because of the times that we're living in. And at the same time, what my fellow survivors are asking me to do, I am immeasurably well qualified to do. And at the same time, that same statement is true for many of the women who need an example of a family man. What these women are asking me to do, I'm immeasurably well qualified to do. So sometimes when you have more than one gifting and you're pulled lovingly in diverse directions, sometimes it is hard to achieve a healthy solution to the problem of, okay, I'm not a people pleaser. I know I can't please everybody. I'm not a people pleaser. I don't appease everybody. What I'm saying is that when you're good at more than one thing, which means you're going to have more than one audience because of who you are, and the giftings is just extra, beautiful extra, then it's like, okay, how do I deal with the gray areas of empathy, the gray areas of compassion, the gray areas of sympathy, right? And so sometimes being a helper, you feel like what you're being asked to do is healthy, but it feels contradictory. Because if you're in a relationship, you don't sleep with nobody else, right? But there are people that need sensory processing, hospitable type of adult films. When you do adult films, you're expected to have sex with one person. So I really shouldn't see it as a contradiction. That may not be the right word. I think the best word is the intricacies. I think intricacies is a much better word. So the intricacies of neighborly love, the intricacies of selfless love, the intricacies of universal love. I think intricacies is better, much better word than contradictory. And I've learned to no longer feel guilty or shameful about that. So another thing, for me, I would never put my clients or customers in unethical circumstances, and I would never have them do the same to me. People that are my equals, we would never be in unethical circumstances together. And you know, the weird thing is that sometimes attraction happens between higher ups and lower level staff members. Or should I say lower staff members? That person has more authority than you, right? But y'all are both adults. And sometimes attraction happens. I recognize the gray areas of human attraction. Because in the professionalism world, that would be constituted as sexual abuse, romantic abuse, sensual abuse, erotic abuse. And at the same time, you have rare amounts of people that don't use their higher up power to overthrow somebody that works under them. And the person who's under the higher up, the lower down, they're not in a situation of marginalization. It was, you know, my boss and I were attracted to each other's inner beauty, and the outer beauty is just the lovely bonus. So that's something that the world of work really has not addressed. Like, what if it comes from a healthy place, you know, where no one is being seized? You know, it has nothing to do with, if you get with me, I'll give you employee of the month every month. It's not that. It's not, I'll give you raises all the time. It's not that. It's not, well, I'll give you promotions all the time. It's not that. Or I will put you in higher positions in the company if you get with me. It's not that. Because people like me, the rare amounts of people in terms of the mixing of business and pleasure, well, we don't do casting couch. We don't do the casting couch, never under any circumstances. And we never do the whole sleep your way to the top thing. We never do casting couching. We never do sleeping our way to the top. We hate those things. So I'm talking about a place where you work for your boss, technically for the company, but y'all get along very well. No problems, no issues, no conflicts. The working relationship is wonderful. And as y'all got to know each other being on the job, y'all attracted to each other's soft-heartedness, each other's prudence, P-R-U-D-E-N-C-E, each other's healthy decision-making skills, each other's people skills, each other's financially sound practices, and each other's moral values. Notice, no one is being sold a pipe dream. No one is being sold a bill of goods. No one is being gassed up. No one is being lied to. There's no blackballing, no blacklisting, no lowballing at all in this scenario. So these are the things that professionalism really have to address these things. Because I'm talking about healthy scenarios where in the world of work, you're dealing with noble characters as a noble character yourself. Rare breeds in the professionalism world, rare breeds in the code of ethics world that we are. We are these rare breeds, people like me. So thank you for hearing me. By the way, people like me, we don't do cheating scandals. We don't do sex scandals, and we don't do sex work scandals either. People like me, we hate these things. End of episode. There's healthy womanizing, then there's the male pig womanizing. There's the healthy manizing, then there's the misandry manizing. There's the healthy non-binary izing, then there's the feckless version of non-binary izing. It's also okay not to womanize, not to manize, and not to non-binaryize. And you know, overall, I will say that not being a family man has nothing to do with being a sex shop. It's not about, what's the best way to put it? My not being a family man has nothing to do with wanting to be a sex shock jock. And my not being a family has nothing to do with sexing people as a sex surrogate. That, no. What I will say is this. I don't force those types of life on me at all.
I don't make them so mandatory that I lose sight of myself. In actuality, I'm not a family man for all the right reasons. All of my not being a family man is I'm using the time and freedom to serve the needy. I know I'm a person that's the needy. And I'm not a family man because I'm having more time to work for the disenfranchised. I feel like the family man life and my higher calling would be inconvenient to each other. And I would feel that my higher calling, also known as my higher career, and my family man life is like, wow, we're robbing each other of freedom. So it's like, for me, I'm choosing not to be a family man because in my particular situation, I can serve designation of workers by collar color. As a single, child free, pet free, living alone primarily person,